Aviation's Only Ant, a few minutes with his creator. I'm Paul Plack, and this is Aero News. Wes Olszewski's Clyde Morris cartoon strip has been evolving for more than 30 years and is now a regular feature of our website. I thought you might be interested in meeting Wes and getting some of the story behind Clyde. Wes, welcome, and thanks for spending a few minutes with our listeners today.
Oh, it's good to be here. I'm always a slave to Aero News whenever they call.
Well, I won't get into the details of your contract, but I wanted to talk to you because I think that whenever somebody writes a comic strip that gets a wide following, especially within a particular niche like aviation, the readers of that comic strip have an interest in figuring out what was in the background of this person that led them to become the person who creates this stuff. Tell people how Clyde Morris came to be briefly and why he's an ant.
Well, Clyde Morris has his roots, actually, in model rocketry. When I was a kid, and we're talking age 12 up to the time I went to college at age 19, I was really into model rockets, and I loved to put ants on board to shoot them up. I used to call them astronauts. And, of course, I always tinkered with my rockets and didn't build them by the instructions, and so I had a lot of catastrophic failures. And I found that it was real fun to draw cartoons and spoof my own rocket failures. And, of course, there was always an ant on board. And then when I was in high school, I started sending these little cartoon ants on adventures, undersea adventures and airplane adventures, most of which you can find on the website, clydemorris.com. Did I mention that? Oh, anyway.
Yes.
And so when I went away to college, I had an entire portfolio full of these stupid cartoon strips that I had drawn in my high school and junior high school years. And I proceeded to decorate our dorm room my first semester of college with some single-frame cartoons. And one of the guys that lived next door to me, a guy named Dan Carger, we call him Dan the Man, he was on the newspaper staff at Embry-Riddle. And he suggested that I should bring my portfolio of these cartoons back with me after Christmas vacation so we could take them up to the newspaper office. And that's what I did. And I didn't think anybody would even want to read the darn things. And it turned out that they really did want to put them into the student newspaper. So, of course, the character, the lead character, had to be an ant because that's what I was used to drawing. And Charles Schulz has a cute little dog, so where's this college kid going to get his lead character? It's going to come from an ant. The first cartoon strip was due on a Monday, and I didn't have a name for the character. And I had gone through all these different names from all the guys in the dorm. We're coming up, and when I say guys, that's not me being sexist. Embry-Riddle was almost 100% male in those days.
Right, right.
Anyway, a lot of the guys in the dorms were coming in with these names from aviation and, you know, the Wright this or the Wilbur that, and nothing was working. It just wasn't working. And as the cartoonist, I'd look at the frame, and it just wasn't working. If you look at that first cartoon strip, which is on the website, you'll see that it's very clear that in those first, there were three strips in that first one. And in the middle one where the character is named, you can see almost where the blank spot was, where I hadn't penned in the name yet. I was on the bus on my way from our off-campus dorm to the main campus to turn in this cartoon strip. And when I was racking my brain over the name, and when the bus turned onto Clyde Morris Boulevard, which runs right across the front of the campus, I looked at the street sign, and I went, that's the name. And I changed the C to a K, and I penned it in right there on the bus, took the cartoon strip in. It was published. It came out 2 days later on a Wednesday, and the rest is history.
Well, and the fact that you were at Embry-Riddle meant that all your readers it immediately would identify with that character by knowing that street.
Well, not only by knowing that street, but also it turns out that the ant, the little tiny guy, little itty-bitty microscopic person that the whole world is bigger than, was something that everybody could relate to there, because it was a big university even then, and you felt as a freshman, and there was a lot of freshmen on that campus that semester, you felt like you were that little ant. You were the little guy, and there was this big towering world around you that you had to constantly fight against. And that's what Clive Morris has always gone up against.
Well, let me back up a little bit, because there's a story behind why you wound up at Embry-Riddle University, and I think it's kind of interesting.
Yeah, I come from a working-class family and grew up on the wrong side of the Saginaw River in Saginaw, Michigan, where what you do is you grow up and maybe you graduate from high school, and then you would then in the 70s go off and join the UAW and go to work in the auto plant or in some industry that was related around that. My dad was a 35-year railroad engineer, and he also was the world's best Zamboni driver. And so I grew up in this working class environment, and that's what we were all supposed to do. And I couldn't see it. I wasn't going to do that. So I had an interest in things that flew, because I had an interest in rocketry and the space program. And I was in the Civil Air Patrol. I liked airplanes. And I decided that I wanted to break away from that. That I wanted to break away from that industry and that blue collar lifestyle. And so I decided to go off to Embry-Riddle. And frankly, everybody that I knew outside of my dad told me I couldn't do it. You can't do this. It's, people like us don't do things like this. People like us don't go to those places.
Right.
You don't have the money. Nobody's rich enough. And so I had to work my way through school, but I did it. And I got out of the what turned out to be the Rust Belt. Mm-hmm. And I don't have anything against people who want to work for a living in a factory. That's fine. It just wasn't for me.
Right. Well, I grew up in Buffalo, New York, and a lot of that same thing applied there. I mean, people either went to work for Bethlehem or Republic Steel or at one of the General Motors plants, later for some of the small aerospace companies in the area. But my entire generation left town, pretty much.
Same thing in Saginaw, Michigan. A lot of the people that I knew as a teenager bolted out of town, some of them just because the auto plants were closing. And frankly, they took Gray Iron Foundry and they bulldozed it and planted grass.
Right.
I mean, that tells you something about where that industry is going in that area. And I even had cousins who had to go to places like Shreveport, Louisiana to keep their jobs because they were senior at GM.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, a lot of things change, and I just wanted to be different. I didn't want to be in that crowd that's going to go to work in, quote, the shop. So I didn't.
We'll be back for more with Clyde Morris creator Wes Olszewski in a moment. I'm Paul Plack, and you're listening to a special feature from Aero News.
At Cirrus Design, we don't ignore the fundamentals of aviation design. We just give them an ingenious new interpretation. The Cirrus SR22 GTS, Cirrus's premium luxury ride that has come to define Cirrus aircraft as one of the world's elite. Every dream option, from supple leather seats to an exhilarating 310 horsepower performance and speed, comes standard, giving new meaning to the phrase fully loaded. When flying the SR22 GTS, getting there is truly more than half the fun. To learn more, call 888-750-9000 or check us out on the web at cirrusdesign.com.
Finally, aviation headsets have evolved. Clarity Aloft is the next generation of headset design. Clarity Aloft headsets employ patented Comply Canal tips, composed of soft viscoelastic foam, the same foam tips used in advanced hearing aids. More than simple earplugs, these foam tips provide full-spectrum noise reduction and outstanding attenuation. This advanced technology is lab-tested, proving that viscoelastic passive noise reduction is superior to active noise reduction. For more information, call 612-747-3197 or check out the innovative Clarity Aloft headset on the web at clarityaloft.com.
Welcome back to the Aero News special feature. Today, a few minutes with Wes Olszewski, creator of the Clyde Morris cartoons you see on Aero News. Wes left the Rust Belt to pursue his dream at Embry-Riddle. But after he finished school, his life didn't follow the typical aviation university graduate script.
No, not really, because my intention when I left for Embry-Riddle, I've essentially left everything behind. I had another path that was leading me toward becoming a professional hockey player. I left that behind. I left my family behind. Not that I'm estranged from them, but, you know, I left home. and I left my girlfriend behind, never saw her again, and went off to Daytona Beach, Florida from Saginaw, Michigan to do this wild thing of flying airplanes. But my intention was not to go all the way through school, become an airline pilot for one of the big airlines and sit in the cockpit till I turn 65 and some bankruptcy court takes away my pension. That's not what I wanted to do with my life.
Although, in all fairness, it was kind of hard to foresee at that point that that's the way it would go for her.
Yeah, that is true, but that was my end goal. My end goal was to go to Embry-Riddle and finish. That was my goal, was to graduate, to finish, to get it done, to not quit. And I think that goes back to my working class heritage, is you don't quit. You always keep going. And that was the one thing I always kept telling myself as I worked my way through college, is you can't quit.
Although, in all fairness, Wes, it could be said that you did make a career out of finishing Embry-Riddle.
Well, you know, I've actually heard that. You know, and as I went through the process of working my way through college, which people don't understand, they use the term professional student a lot. And that's a professional student makes money and a living from being in school. I wasn't in school.
Right.
Most of the time, I was across the street at the Kmart store, filling counters and working in the garden shop, or I was at one of the hotels working as a security person, busting heads during spring break, or I was mopping hangar floors back in Saginaw, Michigan, and you know, living at my parents' house for a couple of years at a time to make enough money to get back in and keep going. And it was almost an obsession with me to finish, just to finish.
Well, let's fast forward a little bit in the interest of time. You spent on and off 10 years at Embry-Riddle, and then you eventually accumulated a total of 5,000 hours, and you say not one of those hours has been pleasure flying.
Yeah, that is absolutely true. Yes, I was, let's say, associated with the university for a year because I was in and out, in and out, in and out, more out than in for 10 years. And then after I got out, I went the standard route that a lot of people go, is flight instructor, and then regional airline furlough, another regional airline captain, major airline, realize you're in purgatory, and then I went corporate and did that for 3 years. And so that's the direction that I basically went in. But when I got to Embry-Riddle, the first thing they told us during our orientation is, this is your job. You're a professional now. You're not here for hobby flying. You're not here for fun flying. You are here to be a professional aviator, and you better start thinking that way right now. You better start treating this as your job. And I took that seriously when I heard that. And like I said, coming from a working class background, that's the way I saw it, is that's my job. And that really became ingrained in me. And the result is that I don't pleasure fly. I'm not a pleasure flyer. God bless people that are, and I hope they really like it. I went to school at Embry-Riddle with people who they went to school and they flew all day, and then, or they went in the military and they flew, and every waking hour they spent flying other things just for fun. But I'm not that way. For me, this is a job. Flying is a job. And every time I get into a cockpit, even if I got into one today, I would be at work. And that's just the way I see it. And some people think that's odd. I don't. I've always seen flying as my job.
Well, Clyde Morris obviously got under the skin of a few people at Embry-Riddle from time to time, but it also gained you kind of a special standing among the administration there that kind of surprised you.
Well, yeah, it did, because what happened was, first of all, I was a second semester freshman when the cartoon strip hit. You never expect something to become a hit, especially when you're in that environment. I was just struggling to get the next class done. And doing the cartoon strip once a week, three strips a week, I didn't think anybody was even really reading it. And as I can tell you right now, as an author with, you know, 12 books under my belt, you get to the point where you start writing stuff and you really don't think about people out there reading it. And that was the same thing with Clyde Morris. I didn't realize that there were people out there that were reading it and liking it. And I tell the story that when the first strip came out, I sat in class and watched people reading the Avion newspaper and just thumbing right past it without paying any attention.
Right.
And then that same night of that first trip, I got off the bus to go eat dinner, and there was my cartoon strip laying in the gutter. It had been raining, and it was the cartoon up, and the guy in front of me stepped on it. You know, so I really thought that this was going to go nowhere, and I was convinced that, you know, what a guy like me, what am I going to do with a cartoon strip like this?
Early lessons in humility make us thankful when it happens for us later on.
Yes, that's true. And what I didn't know was that the administrators had gotten to the point where they would joke that you hadn't made it as an administrator at the university until you had been in Clyde Morris.
Tomorrow, I'll finish the conversation with Clyde Morris creator Wes Olszewski. We'll talk about the events of the past few years, which form a good basis for lampooning, and some which don't. You've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. Find us on the web at www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.